Ray and Vi Donovan are still with us. If you're just joining us, allow me to recap briefly on the story they've been sharing. Their son, Christopher, was murdered 11 years ago this month, the 25th of May 2001. The three young people responsible were sentenced, were found guilty of murder. They were aged 16, 15 and 19, sentenced to life with a minimum of 9 to 10 years for the 16-year-old and the 19-year-old, and then Her Majesty's pleasure for the 15-year-old, and just discovered that, perhaps surprisingly for people who've never been close to an experience like this, once the verdict is handed down and the sentences are issued by the judge, that's it for the family of the victim. The attention, the police scrutiny, care, the law, the media, all of the people who, for the previous 6 weeks of the trial, have been dancing around the story, if you will, disappear. And that leaves you, as we said 5 minutes ago, Vi, to rebuild your life. How on earth do you start doing that?
We realised that everything that happened was so negative. There was no one out there who was going to give us any positive. So we decided to go look for it for ourselves. And we looked for it by starting a trust, by helping to change the way people see things. That's what we did.
This is where the phrase restorative justice appears in the story. Explain to us exactly what that means, Ray.
Restorative justice, for the first time, a victim gets a voice. The victim is, normally, it's all the offender. In court, it's the offender, the offender, the offender. And the victim doesn't even have a voice. My friend got a gun to his head, and the police said to him, "We don't need you to come go on holiday." He never got, we don't get a voice, victims. But with restorative justice, for the first time, we get a voice.
So how did that voice become heard? How did you begin meeting other people? How did the process begin by which you got involved in this?
Well, Christopher's old school teacher rang me one day, and she says she's involved in a restorative justice program being run in Downview Prison. And would me and Vi be interested in coming? To be quite honest, we said no. You know, but then I rang her back and said, "Well, tell us what happened," and she told us. And then they said,
"What did she tell you, Ray? What did she say?"
She said, "It's a room full of 16 women."
Yeah.
"And we will sit in front of them and tell our story."
And these are women who've committed crimes?
Yeah, this is in Downview Prison, yeah.
Okay, so it's quite serious crimes in some cases.
Yeah, and she told us, and she explained what we do, and we said, after a long talk, we said yes. Then she sent the manager around to explain everything. And we went into this prison with a lot of prejudice, didn't we, Vi?
Oh, absolutely.
A lot of prejudice.
Yeah. What sort of prejudice, Vi?
Kind of lock them up and throw away the key kind of prejudice, yeah. That kind of feeling. And, you know, that was the way I was brought up. You know, you lock them up, that's it.
But this is 4 years after Christopher's death. And, and it's almost as if you're both, especially you, Vi, you're running on tracks. So there's one track that understands the importance of forgiveness and everything makes sense, but then on the other track, the same life has got, as you've just said, these.
But my mother's heart.
Long held, yes.
Yeah. And I want to look for the positive, and I want it, but it's really hard to obtain it. So I've got to keep putting myself in that position where I can see the way. So I goes into the prison, and I'm looking at them, and I realise they're actually more scared of me than I'm scared of them.
And another thing, we realise they're human beings. They got a heart like us, they got lungs like us, and we found out they were more scared of meeting us than we were meeting them.
Why do you think that was?
Because for the first time they're going to hit, we're not a piece of A4 paper.
Got you.
We're victims, and they never see a victim before, some of these.
And they will not be able to file their own victims away in some notional mental filing cabinet. No. They're going to remember that, because as you've just said about the perpetrators, the victims are the same as them. They've got lungs, they've got...
Absolutely. They not only hear our story,
they've got parents.
They begin to think about their victims. And oh my goodness, it hits them.
Does it?
Yeah. Oh, really does.
Because on the programme, they learn about the ripple effect.
Go on.
And if you look at our ripple effect, it goes on and on and on. You know, I could go on forever, it'd take the whole programme out, but it's a lot of ripples. And they learn about the ripple effect in their life. But then they have to go away when we're finished and write about our story and write about another story they might have heard, or their own thing. And the great thing is, we go in on week three, and on week six we go back.
Yes.
And these men and women make what's called an act of restitution. And they stand up in front of the governing team, the other men or women, members of the community, and they actually say sorry. All right, some are going through the motions, we can see that, but others really mean it, and they do this in a letter, a card. They even make things. The other week we were in Kingston Prison and someone made us a lovely chessman out of matchsticks. Yeah? Because we stand in as Surrican victims.
So how often are you doing it now? How often are you going?
We haven't
all year
stopped.
Round.
Yeah.
Really? It's become a mission, in a way. It's become a vocation.
It is, yeah.
Can I say?
Because we know that it works, and we've seen tears, and we've seen, oh my goodness, I didn't realise, and we've heard... I didn't think about my family when I hurt, when I did this thing.
This is
another
thing your listeners might not know. We don't get paid for it. We do this voluntary. And we're not the only ones. There's a lot of victims like us out there doing the same thing.
Absolutely.
Because we found that everybody's got a worth, and that's what we tell them. You're worth something. And they never hear that before, these men and women.
They will, yes, and yet there will, as you know, and as you have no doubt encountered since starting this work, there will be people listening who will say, well, of course they're going to say sorry, and of course they're going to do this, and of course you're going to do that. They've behaved inhumanly. Why are you treating them so humanely? We'll get onto that in a moment. I know I said I wasn't going to take any calls, but Jeff in Islington has rung in, and I think he's got something quite interesting to say. Jeff, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Nick.
What do you want to say, Jeff?
Sorry, James. I'm a cousin of Ray, and I was listening to the story and how inspirational he's been in my life by his forgiveness, and, you know, it was just inspirational. I needed, in my time of life, when I heard what you'd done, I couldn't understand it.
So you're driving around Islington today, and you hear your cousin...
I hear my cousin
telling this story on the radio, but it must be a story you've heard before. So why is it touching you anew?
It just touches me about I turned my life over to a different way of life, and when I heard you pray and Vi had forgiven this young man, I couldn't understand it at first, but I just believe I can now, and just hearing it on the radio just came back to me about how that, you know. How they handled it.
Jeff, thank you for getting in touch.
Yeah. It's, no problem.
It's a small world, isn't it?
Get in contact, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff.
Yeah, you've spoken for a long time.
Have you not, really? No. Have you been out of touch for years?
Yeah. Yes.
But, well, there you go. You keep...
How remarkable.
But isn't it just, you're back in touch now. You'll understand why I inserted that into proceedings. I hope I haven't affected your concentration. So, you were about to tell me how you respond to people who say, oh, come on, what are you going to do next? Give them a biscuit. These are dangerous criminals, and you're treating them like vulnerable children.
Right. Kingston Prison is in Portsmouth. They done three courses in there. This is called Sycamore Tree. There's other courses running on. They do three courses. And on the second course, one of the wardens came up to one of the leaders and said, I can have a word in private. He went, yeah. He went, don't stop doing what you're doing. The atmosphere in this prison has changed. And 100% changed. It's done a turnover with the men because of what's happening in this room. And we get that in quite a lot of prisons. Prisoners are lining up to do the course. They're not forced to do it. It's voluntary. Some have to do it with a prison plan line, but most of it is voluntary, and they line up to do it. They want to do it.
It's not about whether they deserve for us to go.
Yes.
It's not about that. They've done the crime. They pay the price. There's justice. But alongside of that, what about why they do what they do? What about showing them that actually what they've done has consequences? We don't do that in court. We just sentence them. Retribution, revenge, let's get our own back, lock them up. But we never deal with why, and we never deal with show them what they've done so that they won't come out and reoffend.
Which is the ultimate purpose.
Which is the whole purpose.
Isn't it? Yeah.
And it's halving the reoffending rate. That's fantastic. You've never heard that before, and it's fantastic.
No, I haven't.
It's turning it, and it's not, and it's turning around even serious crimes.
Yeah.
It's turning around drug dealers who suddenly say, hang on a minute, oh my goodness, I see my victim now. I see the victims along
the line.
Because
we don't go in there lovey-dovey.
Right. How do you go in there?
Well, we go in there first, we tell them we're worth something, then we tell our story, and then I hit the... Because a lot of drug dealers will say, we ain't got no victims.
Right.
And I will say to them, look, if you're a drug dealer in this room, because of someone like you, my son's dead. Now, you come to me in the tea break and see me face to face and tell me you ain't got a victim. I dare you.
Mm.
And they start crying.
And then if they try to defend it, we'll go, hang on a minute.
Yeah.
Somebody sold drugs to that 15-year-old that day so badly that he was off his head.
Yes.
If you weren't on the streets doing it, our son might have been alive. Because it might have been just a small fight, not just over the top. You see, people in the court, they said, the witnesses, that they acted like total animals. They were off their heads. Toxicology showed how they shouldn't have even been standing up. Yeah. It's unbelievable. So we know all of those things. Mr. Drug Dealer, if you weren't there, maybe our son would be alive. Think about that. And it really hits them. Mm. I mean, they've never heard that in court before, have they? It's unbelievable.
This is, as you've stressed, this is all volunteer-driven. Yes. And the prison reform, the prison fellowship is behind the Sycamore Tree programme. There are other restorative justice projects as well.
Many of them.
Do you think it should be more formalised? Should it be part of the judicial process? Yeah. Should it be part of the prison system?
100% yes.
Absolutely.
100% yes. It should be done straight away.
And what would you say to people who say things like, and you've met them, I've met them, but in fact we've met one or two of them together, who say things like, I don't want to understand them, I don't care why they did what they did, I just want them to be punished, which is a understandable position.
Then I'd say, do you want them to keep reoffending? Do you want them, because eventually they're going to come out of prison. And nothing is done about the way they're behaving. Mm. Nothing is done about facing the consequences.
All prison is a school.
Do you want them to
re-offend? It's a school to learn how to do something else. If you went in there for stealing a car, you'll come out knowing how to steal a car in 100 different ways when you come out. It's just a school for villains.
And yet it's so much easier to get people dancing around the opposite maypole, isn't it? To get people dancing around the maypole which says we need to be tougher, we need to be stronger, we need to
be
less.
We don't all that, it doesn't work.
And yeah, we need to have maybe
proper
tougher sentences
and
proper punishments, but also
what
proper rehabilitation.
And that's what you're doing. You're
restorative, there's two words there, restorative justice. They go together.
The story moves now to a remarkable place where your support for restorative justice, your work in prisons, meeting criminals, trying to make them understand the repercussions of their actions, what you call the ripple effect, leads inevitably to the question of meeting with the young men responsible for killing your son, Christopher.
Yeah.
You met the first one, I think, on his release in July of last year.
That's right, yes.
What happened?
Well, what happened first was we wrote them a letter, and one wrote back, this is years ago, and he said, I can accept your forgiveness, I'll never forgive myself. Then another one wanted to meet us, and at the last minute, the people that arranged it all really mucked it up.
Okay.
And it was so mucked up, he wouldn't meet us. And then I was talking to a lady called Sean West from Why Me last year, and she said, well, I can arrange all that again. And through Lizzie Nelson and people called Calm, they arranged us to meet. It don't just meet straight away. It takes months of preparation.
Yes.
Backwards and forwards. And July last year, we met one of the boys, didn't we? And he was, the first thing he said to us was, I was a 15-year-old coward. I left your son on the road for that. I'm sorry. And that meant the world to us. We got answers to questions.
Yeah, we waited 10 years to hear that.
Mm. Did you just walk into a room and he was waiting?
No, sorry. They ask you, who do you want in a room first? This is all the questions. I said, I want to be in the room first. And then they go away and come back and said, why? I said, because when he walks in, I want to shake his hand. And when he walked in, I could do no more but just put my arms around him, and he wouldn't let go of me. And he kept whispering sorry in my ear, and then he whispered thank you. And then we sat down and we got talking, and that's what the first thing he said, like he wanted to get it out of his system straight away. I think he was rehearsing it, if you know what I mean. He just wanted to...
Well, it's odd that you describe it in those ways, because everybody listening is thinking how difficult and traumatic that must have been for you.
Yeah.
But of course, it would have been incredibly difficult for him as well, regardless of his crimes and guilt.
Absolutely, the look on his face. I mean, if you face someone who you've murdered their son,
it takes a lot of guts.
It's not an easy thing to do.
Was there anything left, Vi, of that impulse to tear him to pieces that had been in place 11 years previously?
No.
Not even a whisper of
it? I didn't want to. I hugged him. I surprised myself. I hugged him. Because I heard the word sorry. I heard the word I wanted to hear all those years ago in the court. Instead of lying, I wanted to hear the truth. And I heard the truth from him. And he admitted what he'd done to us. And that was fantastic to hear the truth. He released me too. And I released him because I told him I want him to forgive himself, and I forgive him.
Do you think he will?
Yeah. in time.
I hope so.
And you want him to. You don't want him to. I mean, he'll carry a burden, but you don't want him to carry an unbearable burden for the rest of his life.
You want him to live the life Christopher hasn't got.
Do you really, Ray?
Yeah.
If
he's changed his life and moved on, it's better than having a park bench with a plaque on it. You know?
Yeah. If you live in this unforgiveness of yourself for what you've done, you carry that burden around, you'll get angry with yourself, you don't like yourself very much. I know, I've been there. It's not a nice place to be.
And if these
and
people,
then you'll go and use it inappropriately.
And it can't achieve anything anyway.
No, it
does nothing.
And if these people had their way and bring back the death penalty tomorrow, or last year, we would never have got the word sorry.
Yeah.
And that means so much more to you than...
It won't bring Chris back, will it?
No.
If we would have hung the boy, hang him, we wouldn't bring Chris back. Lock him away for the rest of the life, won't bring Chris back. We had to educate them. And we don't mean ABC, we mean educate them about the crime they've done. This is why we're so passionate about restorative justice. We had to educate these men and women.
I tell you, I understood why you did what you did before I met you, but having listened to this story now, I almost see it as becoming it is, isn't it? It's part of who you are now.
Yeah,
it's
not victims have a right to hear sorry. They have a right to face those people. And nobody should be able to stop them. They have a right to hear the answers. Why our son? Why me? Why all of that? Victims have that right.
And now we move to, by coincidence actually, because as I said, we first met 2.5 weeks ago, and I've tried to get you in to the studio, but when we were setting up this visit last week, you mentioned that it was last week that you met another of Christopher's killers.
Met the second one, yes.
For the very first time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did that go?
Again, it was powerful. Again, as he walked in the door, we just hugged and he wouldn't let go. Another one wouldn't let go of me. And again, he kept whispering, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. He wouldn't stop saying sorry.
This is 11 years after Christopher's death.
But it's like yesterday to all of us. It's like yesterday, you know, this is it. Even though it's 11 years, it's yesterday. I could tell you everything that went on that day. That week. But that boy was, he was a man when he came in, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And he sat there again and he told us, he turned to us and said, you're two decent people, I'm going to tell you the truth. God. And he sat there and told us the truth. We're not allowed to say what was said in the room, you've got to
understand
that.
Of course.
But he told us the truth.
And it was a comfort to you, or?
Yes, it was, yeah.
And he understood in prison the principle of restorative justice. Because some of the programs he'd been on had touched on that. So it made him think, he said, for the first time about us. Really think hard about what he'd done to Chris.
And another one, the first boy, he said when he was in Fulton for 2 years, he didn't admit to anything.
Really?
He said, I didn't kill Chris, he wouldn't admit to it. He said, I went on a restorative justice program, not what you do, Rainbow, I said. I went on another one, and from that day to this, I can't get Chris out of my head and out of my heart. So it works.
And that's a more fitting memorial to Christopher than a corpse would have been if we had
hanging.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Had the death penalty.
Yeah.
Some people want a park bench, some people want a building or a gym. I want their lives changed and I want them to stop doing what they do and I want these young people to realise and be pulled up sharp. You know, many of us, unless we face the person we've hurt and we see in their face what they've done, we can't say sorry and mean it, can we?
I don't imagine we can. No. I really, what did you see in his face, Vi?
I saw shame. I saw admittance. And I saw the truth in his face. I saw the tears for him.
Will you see them again? Do you build, or is it dealt with now? Is the chapter closed?
No, how does it work? No, in fact, we can't do it at the moment because of situations, but he wants to come in with us and work with us with children. He wants to come into the schools with us and explain what, you know, his consequences. And we're hoping that will happen. In fact, we're hoping a lot of things.
So this is a big part of the work that you do now as well, not just visiting the people for whom it is, in a sense, already too late. It's not too late for them to change, but it's too late for them not to commit the crimes that have taken them into prison, and the messages you deliver to young people who perhaps are at a fork in the road in their lives, to children of school age who perhaps have got temptation in front of them and need to be made aware of where that path actually leads rather than where they think it leads in their own sort of naive and slightly sensationalist way.
Yeah, we go to schools and we go to schools, youth clubs, everywhere.
What sort of reaction do you get?
Powerful. I mean, the teachers can't believe it. You know, the teachers said their attention span's only a few minutes.
Yes, that's what
we can hold them for an hour. I don't know how it happens. We just go in the room, tell our story and explain things, and the kids are there. And one kid said he's going to change me with a load of boys in the street.
Really?
I'm not going to hang around the street. My mum keeps telling me to stop doing it. Now I understand why.
That's just one.
And when one school in London, I won't name the school, but a young girl came forward after we talked and she said, I hit a girl over the head and she's out of school at the moment. She won't come back because I was with a gang in here and we all did it because we didn't like her, because she dissed my mum, because I could. And now I'm realising, she had tears in her eyes and she said, the teachers have been telling me for weeks what I'd done. I really never understood, but now I understand. I could have killed her. Oh my goodness. And she was in such shock. And we said, what can we do about this? And she said, can I write a letter to her and tell her the truth?
I told her to write a letter and she's going to.
Wow.
And in another school up in Milton Keynes, we're going up there next Wednesday to give the four boys four medals and four certificates because they found a knife. They called the police and they didn't touch it, nothing. And we said, for that, we're going to give you an award. So we do give children awards. And yeah, I don't mean children, no, young people awards to show what they've done.
And anybody who wants to find out more about the work that you do now in memory of Christopher can go to the website chrisdonovantrust.org. I'll put the details on my website, my blog as well. It is, there's also a it's a charitable organisation, isn't it, as well? So I'll put all the details up there.
Thank you.
I just want to thank you both for coming in.
Thank you.
Because if you've given anything like the pause for thought to people listening that you both gave to me when we first met, then I think we will be forever in your debt.
Thank you.
Ray and Vi Donovan, thank you so much
for coming in.
Thank you.